For KOSU, I'm Michael Cross, and it's time for the season premiere of This Week in Oklahoma Politics with ACLU Oklahoma Executive Director Ryan Kiesel and Republican political consultant Neve Hill. Welcome back from the summer vacation.
Thanks. It's
great
good
to be back.
Yes. Yeah, good to be back.
It has been a crazy summer while everyone's been away for vacation. I want to get to the stories over the past couple of months, but first, breaking news from this week. Republican Party Chairman Randy Brogdon is calling it quits after just 3 months on the job. A new chairman will be picked on September 12th. Neva, what's going on here?
Well, it's been a turbulent ride, to say the least, in recent months. And we know, just as we left before we took our hiatus, that Randy Brogdon was under fire with his selection of the executive director, then became political director, then became
T.C. Ryan,
out of the mix. But here's where I think it stands right now. There's a lot of confusion. The chairman, Randy Brogdon, seems to have indicated that he plans on resigning. I think the resignation has not come yet, and I think the issue will be complying with state party rules, where he will actually have to resign if that's his intent. And then once he is out of that position as state chairman, then it would be a situation where the vice chair would pick up the mantle, call for an election, the state committee would come in and make that vote and select a new chairman. So that may be what is starting. There's still a lot of, again, I think, confusion and controversy over the timing and the sequence, and everybody having to step back and say, okay, we do have rules, let's go read them and let's follow them, so that we don't have any more consternation over what's going on in terms of the party squabbling.
Ryan.
You know, I think that what we saw is a loss of confidence from party leadership in the Republican Party in Senator Brogdon. And so when you lose that as chairman of the party and your party leadership, the face of the party, your elected officials don't have a lot of confidence in your leadership ability and where you're going to take the party as an organization and the structure of the party, then it's difficult to get anything done. It's very difficult to walk into a room and raise money from donors whenever you know, when those donors know that you're crossways with the governor on a lot of things, or that the governor has expressed no confidence in some of your hires and the way you've managed the party. Maybe it seems kind of tidy the way all of this is wrapping up. So I'm going to throw maybe a little conspiracy theory in there, right? And I'm making this up as I go along.
This is from the Democrat.
So we'll see.
Let's make note.
What if Chairman Brogdon, in an effort to regain the confidence and the mantle of authority as chairman, resigns and then runs for chair again, seeking a referendum of confidence from the party? I mean, that could be, he's not running for state senate at this point. It's hard to imagine Randy Brogdon not running for something. Mm-hmm. So maybe he's resigning so he can run for party chair again.
And he certainly had the opportunity to do that this very week, when his former seat, the one that Rick Brinkley stepped out of, he could have very well run for that. There was a lot of speculation as recently as just the last few weeks that, in fact, that might be what he would do. He would resign as chairman. He would run for his Senate seat again complete the remaining years that he would have based on term limits. But that didn't happen. So I think what we're going to see is the departure of Randy Brogdon as state chair in some fashion fairly quickly. And hopefully out of that, what we'll see is kind of the calming of the waters and the Republicans uniting, looking toward 2016 and a lot of races that they'll be very interested in having a united front and moving forward.
Well, and this would have mattered a lot more 10, especially 20 years ago, when both the Democratic and the Republican Party played a much more important role as gatekeepers for political leadership in the state. But as that power in both parties has waned, even though Republicans have the majority, the party structure itself isn't all that important to maintaining that power.
And I think that's without dispute.
And, I think that, even though there's some turmoil here, nobody, even Democrats, shouldn't look at this and say the Republican Party's in tailspin.
But by the same token, it is always helpful to have party leadership that people respect, that people will follow, and that people can look to be the voice of giving the platform, giving the agenda, and giving the vision for how to unite what right now is a majority of Oklahomans in the Republican Party.
Right. I know we'll talk more about that next week as well. Now, a lot has happened in the realm of politics over the past 2 months. Ryan, what would you say is your biggest story to come out of this summer?
Boy, it's hard to pick. This has been an incredibly eventful, sometimes celebratory, sometimes tragic summer. You know, for me, I think in the history of our nation, one of the when we look back and when I look back on my life and the progress that we've made, one of the milestones is going to be marriage equality. The recognition by the United States Supreme Court earlier this summer that the Constitution prohibits marriage discrimination in the states. 13 remaining states realized marriage equality on that day. Oklahomans, who already had marriage equality as a result of a 10th Circuit opinion, were able to drive to Texas and remain married, which is a big deal. I mean, before that decision, if you were married lawfully in Oklahoma, according to the 10th Circuit opinion, if you drove across the Red River, you were no longer married. And so that uniformity of marriage equality around our country is enormous. I think that the recognition of that fundamental right will seem just common sense in the not-too-distant future, and it'll seem absurd that we fought about it for so long. But for right now, it's an incredible milestone, and it reminds us that we've got a lot of work to do.
Neva, what's your big story for this past
Well,
summer?
I think as Ryan said, it's been a real mix. And I think when you look politically speaking, I mean, you have the tragedy of the murder of Labor Commissioner Mark Costello, and then you have the resignation and the fall from really what appeared to be an almost certain rise to being the president pro tem in the Senate of Rick Brinkley. And so I think you see this kind of on both ends of the spectrum from really not a party perspective, but really from an Oklahoma perspective. It is it's tragic with respect to the Costello family and what they are having to endure and bear through right now. And for, I think, not only the people in the district that Rick Brinkley represented, but really for the institution of the Senate and the legislature to see this happen as tragically because of a compulsive gambling problem, as opposed to other things that we might have seen in the past in terms of public corruption and other things. So, you know, I think those are the takeaways that as we look at all of this, certainly what Ryan spoke of as well. I mean, there have been some historic events happen, and there's certainly been some tragedies as well.
The Costello case, is there something good that can come out of it? And what I'm saying is the dealing with mental illness, it seems like there's a push on both sides now to really deal with mental health in Oklahoma. Do you think that this will push both sides to really look at this?
Well, I think it's clearly. I mean, statistically, it's a huge issue. I mean, we've talked about it, and it's not just an issue of putting more money behind it. It's an issue of trying to figure out how to get services where they need to go. And I think it will be a big discussion item at the legislature in this upcoming session. So
yeah, and we've already seen some state leaders on both sides of the aisle talk about the need for investing in mental health services around the state. And you know, unfortunately, this budget that we're going to see next year is probably going to be even worse than the budget we saw last year. So the idea that there are going to be new dollars for mental health treatment and services for the people of Oklahoma that desperately need it is really a pipe dream. It's probably not going to happen. You know, if nothing else comes of this, if we can begin to talk about mental illness like grownups and get rid of the stigma, you know, so that people with mental illness can, you know, be very open and upfront with their family members and their friends, and it be something like any other health issue that we talk about, and not something that, you know, for the longest time has been cloaked with, you know, shame or something like that, where it's been in the shadows. So maybe if we can begin to remove the stigma of mental illness,
well, and I think,
begin to
and
talk
also
about
begin
it.
To direct the dollars and focus on where the money needs to go, where we can get results. I mean, again, we can talk about every category, whether it's corrections or mental health or education, anything. It's not just about having more money to go there. It's figuring out how do you get the programming in place, how do you get the money directed where it can make an impact, and where we don't continue to be at the bottom of the, you know, a bottom of the statistics on all of these categories. So I think that's where the legislature, again, is going to have the very difficult task of deciding, here's the money. And you're right, Ryan. I think, you know, I mean, the number floating around right now is $1 billion shortfall.
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing as well.
And so when you have that kind of budget hole again, it is about reallocating. It's about making those tough decisions of some places the money is going to have to be shifted to be able to really put a focus where it needs to be a priority.
A big issue tackled this week on both sides of the turnpike was asset forfeiture. On Tuesday morning, supporters of a bill to end the practice of seizing people's property held a study in Oklahoma City, while opponents of the measure spoke in Tulsa that afternoon. And the two lawmakers at the center of the struggle, Senator Kyle Loveless and Anthony Sykes, are both Republicans. Neva, could this be a contentious issue within the GOP next year?
Well, I don't know. I think it'll be a more contentious issue maybe between lawmakers and district attorneys and some of the groups that are definitely most interested and most impacted by this. I think the other thing is, let's face it, this is politics. And, I mean, you have two folks, one of whom has made it pretty clear, at least in Republican Party circles, that Anthony Sykes wants to run for Attorney General in 2018, and certainly Senator Loveless is up for re-election. So, you know, I think the politics is part of it. I think just again, it's one of these issues that's kind of timely out there. Other states are taking action, and when they go to these conferences, this one seems to be the one that's bubbled up that has gotten some attention. But I'm not sure that it's one that's going to go a long way. I mean, when you really start hearing the arguments and the debate back and forth between law enforcement and these lawmakers on which side it's going to come down on, I think it remains to be seen. I think it's going to be a very contentious argument, though, for a while.
Ryan.
Yeah, I think that going throughout this legislative session, it will be contentious. It'll probably go beyond the legislative session. I don't think that we'll see ultimate resolution of this issue in 1 year because so much of it has to do with funding. I mean, it comes down to money. But asset forfeiture as it stands, I think most Oklahomans are just beginning to realize that this practice exists. The ACLU of Oklahoma, we recently completed a study that showed millions were being seized along the I-40 corridor without any criminal charges going along with those seizures. And I think that the idea that an individual in Oklahoma could have their property seized by the government based upon a suspicion, and the money then, if you want to get it back, you've got to go hire a lawyer on your own dime to get it back. And so even if you do prevail in getting it back, you're out your attorney fees. Mm-hmm. So I think that idea that you're, unlike yourself, where you're innocent until proven guilty, that your property is literally guilty until proven innocent under the system, that's a big surprise to most people. And if you're going to have that sort of a trade-off in your civil liberties and your civil rights, you ought to get something in return. And I think the system as it works right now is just broken. It puts incentives on law enforcement to seize dollars rather than to trace those dollars to their ultimate end, to a stash house, to a drug dealer, whomever that may be, because they don't want to go across a jurisdiction, whether it's a county line or a state line, and lose that money to some other entity that does the seizing.
I think when you listen to some of these district attorneys and others, though, on the other side of that coin, what they will tell you is this has been a critical component in giving them the ability to go after these drug pens, after these drug traffickers. And I think that's where the public, I mean, as they get more information, it's less about just a grab, you know, arbitrarily, randomly, and trying to just take away the liberties of just the regular folks out there that are law-abiding citizens, but it really is strategically pinpointed to the people that they've got to get to, and we need to have some results on getting that drug trafficking more under control, certainly than it is right now.
But it's not working, and the incentive right now is to seize the cash and not the drugs. The incentive is to take the cash and not make the arrest, and those are, I think, that what it really comes down to is money. And the law, the legislators really need to step up and fund law enforcement the way that they talk about funding public safety and law enforcement in their campaigns. Gimmicks is just not going to cut it. And this is what this is. This is a funding gimmick.
Another big story which happened this week after our final show in June, the Oklahoma Supreme Court ruled the Ten Commandments monument must be removed from the state capitol. Ryan, there's been some foot dragging by officials to actually remove it, but now it looks like something could be done soon. What's the latest?
Well, yeah, so to be fair to the officials and the governor's office and everybody at the Capitol Preservation Commission, I wouldn't say it's been foot dragging. We've been waiting on the court. There was a rehearing. The court reaffirmed its decision and probably did so more strongly than they did in their original opinion that this does in fact violate the state constitution. And then there's some issue as to getting the mandate out. The court finally gets the mandate out. And now a hearing has been set for September 11th in front of Judge Prince for the ACLU on behalf of our plaintiffs. And the state of Oklahoma, represented by the Attorney General's office, to come in and come up with the process for how this is removed. And it will be. It will be removed in, I believe, a reasonable time. Now, reasonable it really is measured in weeks. It's not measured in months. It's not measured in years. It doesn't mean that we get to wait until maybe there's a state question that would try to undermine this decision in some way so that the monument would be allowed to stay. We don't get to live under laws as we think that they might be at some point in time. We have to live under the law as it is. So I would anticipate after that September 11th hearing that we're probably a matter of weeks away from seeing the monument removed to a more appropriate location.
Neva?
I think what if that in fact occurs, and from a legal standpoint, I think Ryan's point is that that is in motion. The additional factor I think that comes into play is what you alluded to with the fact that there very well could be a constitutional amendment on a ballot sooner rather than later to take away the language in the Constitution that really is what they've been able to rule on as far as taking the position that the monument should not be on state property. So I think, the law versus public sentiment, I think what we'll find if in fact that does go to a ballot and goes to a vote of the people, I think just like we've seen on many issues, I would be very surprised if it was not at least at the outset overwhelmingly popular to try to in fact clear the way, correct the Constitution in the view of those who want to have the opportunity to have something like the monument back on state property.
But I will say that if there were a constitutional amendment, that's the prerogative of the people, if they do that and they amend this important part of our Constitution to remove that important language, that's a real protection against some certain government power and authority, it doesn't necessarily mean that the monument gets to stay there. In fact, I think that there is a much stronger First Amendment challenge that exists now in the wake of our case at the state level and the actions that have and the language that's been used by state officials and the public in general that makes it for a very strong First Amendment challenge. So it would be a real, I think, tragedy for the people of Oklahoma to go through this process of erecting a monument, having the monument taken down, going through a ballot process, amending the Constitution, erecting a new monument, and having a First Amendment challenge and having it removed again. At some point, we just need to stop playing politics with religion.
Well, and we continue to have all of these other issues kind of bubble up alongside this particular one. For instance, one of the Republican lawmakers made the point that would it not be true that some of the Native American art and some of the artwork that's at the Capitol and other places, would it not also be in jeopardy because it does have a religious underpinning. So,
absolutely not. I think the Guardian's safe.
I don't think the Guardian specifically was one of the ones that was mentioned, but
I got to say that Mole Boss and the Haney,
it certainly does open up a lot of other questions. So I don't think one decision by the court is going to be any more comprehensive and close the subject than lawmakers saying that this is not something that they're going to hear when they come back in February.
And I'm sure this won't be the last time we talk about it. So Ryan and Neva's comments do not necessarily reflect the views of the ACLU, KOSU, its staff, or management.